extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Welcome, everybody. You are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G virtual studio. This is your boxing legend, David Goss, with my man, Charlie Davies. We are kitted out. We are ready to rock. We are ready to roll. Excited for the show, Charlie. How are you feeling?
I'm pumped. You know, this is the A-team. Uh-oh,
dynamic so, duo.
You know what it is.
We're going to talk Oba Deuce, I think, at some point this show. But I think you're looking, I'm Oba right here. You could be Clint because you and Clint are boys. So I'll give you that. I would be Oba any day of the week, obviously. We have similar physiques. So it only makes sense.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that assessment.
Oba, Martins, we got a big show coming up, though. We've got Heineken Rivalry is back. Cheers to all you Heinekens out there. Drinking your Heinekens or Heineken 0.0s, whatever you're doing. We've got 2 weekends around All-Star of Heineken Rivalry Week. So we'll hit part one today, a bunch of preview. Obviously, we'll review it next week and then hit part two coming up. We've got the biggest results of week 20, which was this midweek, which was a phenomenal midweek of soccer. The games have been at a high level, goals left and right. It was a lot to try and consume at one time. And then do not forget, we are less than a week away from All-Star. And if you are watching on YouTube, you can see myself and Charlie gorgeously presenting these MLS All-Star jerseys, which are to perfection. And they have the 25th anniversary special crest on it. You can still get one, but it's selling out. So go to MLSsoccer.com and try and get your kit. Charlie, you got a name on the back?
Yeah, it just says Hulk.
Is that what you go by?
No, probably not. It probably says Stanky right there.
Nice.
Or Chuck D. Nice. I don't know. But either way, I like the star details on the kit.
It's good. Also, as a New Yorker,
it gives me an Avengers vibes. Nice.
And as a New Yorker, it's dark with white stripes, which is basically all I wear. So it's acceptable. So you can go to the MLS store, not MLSsoccer.com, to buy this kit, and we'll have more All-Star stuff coming up. If you do go to MLSsoccer.com, though, you can check out Steve Zakuani's Wednesday Takeaways. Joe Lowry, great piece on what's up with the crew, and we'll talk about a bunch of that coming up this show. And then the call-up, unbelievable interview, dual interview with Johnny Russell and Daniel Shallery. A lot of good stuff, including a nice little going-away prank for them on Gianluca Busio, who's now, of course, doing his thing over in Italy. Shout out to our weekly winner of the Extra Time Fantasy League, Tricky Wickies, who put up 89 points in an bold move. He captained Marcelino Moreno, who netted 14 points for him to get him that victory. That
is bold.
That is an ace coaching move.
That's the definition of bold.
It is an earned victory for you. This is not, I have Vela and Rui Diaz up top and I won. Let's get to our producer Anders reminder of the day. All-Star is less than a week away. But if you're an MLS nerd like us, we know that means you can't wait that long, so we have a solution for you every day this week. Pluto TV is airing an All-Star game per day with an all-day All-Star marathon coming up on Sunday, August 22nd at 1 p.m. Eastern time, and then again on Wednesday, August 25th, starting at 9 a.m. Eastern time and running all the way through to the All-Star game. So you can get that on the Pluto TV MLS channel. And of course, we will be out in L.A. doing things. ETR will be coming from you. All-Star today. All these great shows, all this fun that we're going to be having out in LA. And if you are in the area, feel free to reach out to us and let us know. If you want me to come play pickup with you, let me know as well, because right now my body's falling apart and I need to keep a consistent level of games. Otherwise, the decline will get even faster. Let's get into our weekend of week 20, Charlie. Anders asked us, What did we think were the most important results? What were the biggest games of the week? And the first thing that popped to my mind was Tuesday night, Rapids beating the Galaxy in LA 2-1. And I think coming into this week, there was a band of probably 5 clubs that were considered MLS Cup contenders. We've talked about this with Doyle a bunch. It was SKC, Seattle, New England. And then I think the Galaxy had pushed
it. Why was New England third?
They weren't. Yeah. I was just going west to east because we're talking about the Galaxy Rapids. Chill, Charlie, chill. I think the Galaxy had pushed their way into that convo. And I think Orlando and NYCFC had started to get into that convo in the east. Mm-hmm. I think the Rapids are in that tier. The Colorado Rapids went to the LA Galaxy. They get a win. They do it without Kellen Acosta as well. They've sold Sam Vines. They haven't fully replaced him at left back or left wing back. Doesn't matter. They go to LA, they get a 2-1 win, and they, to me, are in the MLS Cup contender tier.
Interesting. I don't think they are in that tier. And I think Robin Fraser's done a good job of making the most of this squad and developing certain players. But I think what they lack and why I can't see them actually winning MLS Cup is they don't have a profound goal scorer, someone who is a game winner, you know, and it might not even have to be someone who can just change the game, but someone who you know is going to bang in goals in those crucial moments in a game. I think they can defend well. I think they're good on set pieces. I think in transition, they're strong. But to have that number nine, someone you can rely on when the game isn't going well, that all they need is one chance to win a game 1-0, they don't have that piece. And I think that is what's preventing them from being in that tier.
And there's no way that I can argue with that, unfortunately.
Hey, I love the enthusiasm and what they've built. I think Robin Fraser doesn't get enough credit because this team was, I'd say, below average before he took over. And now they are above average.
I mean, they are third on points per game in the West, fourth on points. If they won both their games in hand on Seattle and KC, they'd be first in the West coming out of all of this right now, which, as you're saying, for this roster and where they came from after Anthony Hudson is pretty impressive.
Very impressive. But with that being said, and this doesn't mean they can't win a MLS Cup this year. I just don't think when you're talking about teams that are legitimate contenders for MLS Cup because they have, you know, a strong spine. They have players who can change the game at any moment. I don't think they're in that caliber.
But outside of Seattle, I think every game they'd go into in the playoffs, they'd have the best midfield in that matchup. They have three center backs that they can trust. They've got the wing backs that can change the game. But you are correct. Michael Barrios has never been a playoff player. Jonathan Lewis has been inconsistent. Diego Rubio is not a lockdown goal scorer. Galvan has played at wing back mostly where he's been okay, and Nomley's obviously hurt. So you are correct in what you are taking away from them. But I think the way the league is, there is, outside of Seattle and New England, there is not another. Like, I think they are they could be number two to Seattle. That's a tough matchup for them. But SKC has holes, right? The Galaxy, we don't know if Chicharito will be healthy. They have holes. So you look at everyone else, and I think it's fair to say that the Rapids could be a top two team coming into the playoffs, and they could be a favorites for the Western Conference Finals.
I'm not going to argue with that either.
Boom. We have found an agreement.
Dynamic duo.
Marc-Anthony Kay, he's been in three games. He's got one assist so far. He could have been more dangerous, or he could have had more finishes, but he's been dangerous coming out of midfield. They can play a bunch of different ways along the back line as well. And as I said, no Kellen Acosta for this one. So a huge result for the Rapids. We'll talk more about the Galaxy coming up. For Charlie, for you though, midweek, what was your big result and what?
My biggest result was Philadelphia winning at home versus New York City FC. And New York City FC, for me, were one of the better teams in the league, especially in the past six matches, where Valentin Castellanos, I think, has really taken on the role that they needed him to take on, which is being a creative goal scorer, someone you can depend on, who's playing with a confidence. He's involved, good combinations, hold up play, and just always firing shots. You want your striker to do that. I think Jesus Medina has also continued to thrive under Ronnie Dyla. I think Santiago Rodriguez has been a pleasant surprise. I didn't expect him to come in at 21 years old and make such a difference. I think he adds to the midfield. And Thiago, we've seen his game-changing pace, good on the ball, another dynamic player. They have weapons. We always knew from a defensive standpoint, New York City FC with Sean Johnson, Maxime Cheneau, and Alexander Kayens, that trio in the center of the park has always been well-organized, puts out fires. They're good on set pieces. Sean Johnson is a steady goalkeeper, makes the easy save, right? Which not all goalkeepers do in this league. So I really like what I've seen from New York City FC. And, for them to come into this game.
Charlie, you're making a sub right now? Philly. You subbing yourself out?
It's one of my boys came into the office.
Is he ready to jump on ETR?
Yeah, he's ready to jump on. And Philly, they needed this game because we haven't seen them, really play all that well this year. We know what they're capable of, mm-hmm. but they haven't really brought it. And so this was a big win for them, a statement win to kind of get them back into the race and kind of kickstart this run into the playoffs.
So how much more did you expect from Philly? Because I looked at it and said they won Supporters Shield last year. They sold Aronson. They sold Mark McKenzie. I think preseason mm-hmm. I had them fourth or fifth in the East. They are currently, I think, in a three-way tie for third. So I'm not surprised by the way they've played. You've been let down by what you've seen from Philly so far?
I would say yes. I think Gazdag is a player that has potential. I think he can be a big player for them. We knew what Martinez is. We knew what Flock is. Bedoya, Steady Eddie, always going to give you
first goal of the year.
A consistent performance. Yeah, but he's a leader. He plays with that grit and determination, and all the rest of the players, they feed off that. I think for me, it was always Sergio Santos and Kasper mm-hmm. Schmelko. How do they work well together? Are they, are they playing off of each other, not as individuals where we've seen them do in the past? And then the back line, in particular, Jack Elliott and Jacob Glesnes. Without Mark McKenzie, who was stellar for them, who's going to pick up the slack? I thought they would sign a influential center back, and they chose to say, hey, we're going to allow Jack Elliott to be that guy, and we've seen what he can do. At times, it hasn't looked great with those two. So can they be more consistent? And if they can, then I think this team with Andre Blake behind those guys really has a shot to make another run in the Eastern Conference.
Huge news for them coming out of this game. It's been a little bit quiet with this. We mentioned it last week, but obviously family issues, unsure. Jamiro Montero sounded like his wife and child couldn't get to the U.S. He hadn't seen them, so he was sort of looking for a way back to Europe. He played yesterday for the first time since that happened. And then came out in the post-game press conference and said that his wife and child did receive visas. So it sounds like he will stay for Philly, which is a game changer for them. He was suspended for the first game in Club America for CCL anyway, so he could be back for the next game. But going forward, I mean, he's their jewel. He's the one piece that I think could elevate this whole thing. So pretty exciting for Philly fans to see him be back on the field and potentially be available going forward. Anders, because he is a shill and he's a coastal elite and all those things, he had some games that he wanted us to talk about specifically as well from midweek. And his first one was Atlanta on a 3-game win streak, now 3 points off of a playoff spot. Barco's been the guy who's led this to an extent, Charlie, but you've seen an overall cultural change. Did you think when Gabriel Heinze was let go, that we would be here talking about them as a potential playoff team this quickly?
No chance. I mean, what did I say last time? I said they're not going to make the playoffs. Like, it's too big of a hole.
What was the term you used? They're a catastrophe or a bamboozle?
I mean, you could throw all the words out there. But what Rob Valentino has done is incredible. It's almost like, did they really need to hire Gonzalo Pineda at this point, right? Because you could have played out the season. I mean, we don't know how long this coach bump would last if it is just a coach bump. But what he's been able to do is allow the players to play with freedom and enjoy the game. And when a coach has put on shackles within the squad, right, and takes like really this negative or puts this negative cloud around the team where it's not fun anymore and it feels like a job. When you're playing professional soccer, it should be fun. It shouldn't feel like a job. Like it's a passion. And I think what Rob Valentino has done is, hey guys, let's get back to enjoying the game and playing this free flowing attacking style soccer that we've come to know Atlanta to play. And Ezequiel Barco has to be central to that with the investment that they put into him and the skill that he has. Because when he plays with the Argentina youth national team, albeit it's a youth national team, but he's a star. He stands out. Allow him to do that with this squad and put him in a position to succeed. They're doing that. And we've seen in flashes, Ezequiel Barco take over games. He doesn't have the pace, but he does have technical ability. He can strike from distance, set pieces, the combination play. And I think there's something there. I really do. And if Joseph Martinez, as he continues to get back to full fitness, and we see the Joseph Martinez of old, and I still think that's going to be a while from now. Sosa, another good player. I think Moreno is another player who at times has contributed. You have Miles Robinson, who's as good as any center back in this league. Georgie Bello, another rising star. So they have pieces. It's just, will that be enough come the end of the year?
Yeah,
I mean, Montreal seems like they're dropping off a little bit. DC is kind of where they are. Columbus has looked horrible. The opportunity is there. I think the only teams that are safe for me are Philly, Orlando, Nashville, New York, New England. So DC, Montreal, Columbus, anything can change from now until the playoffs.
Yeah, and I think for Atlanta, I said it when Pineda got appointed, a playoff race is worthwhile for them, right? Get the fans back engaged, get them active. And to Pineda's credit, he has said, and obviously not with the group yet because he tested positive for COVID, so still waiting to join the side, he has said, I'm not looking to change anything. Like, we're playing well. I'm fine with that. I'm happy to sort of keep this going. But you mentioned with Barco, the goal he scores against Toronto to win 1-0, it's a deflected goal. He just didn't shoot before. Like, he wasn't taking chances. And so that wouldn't have been an opportunity. And that's kind of been that evolution for Barco, is we need you to be central to the attack. Like he's had the opportunities over the last 2 years to lead the attack, to let the ball run through him, all this stuff. And he just chooses to pass out of dangerous moments or cycle the ball back in possession. And maybe that was pushed by Frank de Boer, maybe not. But now you're starting to see a guy who's trying to create chances, trying to be dangerous. Right before the goal, he had like a cheeky cross that Joseph threw his body at, which we haven't seen Joseph do a ton over the last 18 months, which was promising for Atlanta. So all that's been great. And you mentioned Miles Robinson. Obviously, they missed him a chunk for national team and other things, but he seems to be that rock at the back that can change everything for them.
So in your opinion, who stays for next season, and who are you trying to, you know, move on so that you can bring in somebody to strengthen the squad?
I would assume almost every big piece stays in this group, because you're not going to get rid of the Heinze guys are Sosa, Ibarra, Franco. I don't think you can get rid of any of them, right? And they're all young pieces. They're all on decent contracts. Franco has finally looked like a DP, or he has looked like a strong center back alongside Miles Robinson. The only question marks are, do Robinson or Bello go? And if you sell them, then maybe you have to start to look at how you restructure things, because they've been key to the success for a guy like Franco and Brooks Lennon. But I think, and Luis Araujo, I think is how you say it, he debuted in this game from the start. That's your DP. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if you start next season with a very similar 11 to what you saw last night for Atlanta.
Right. I mean, it'll be interesting, because you definitely need to add depth. There you need depth pieces. And for this Atlanta side, you know, from what I always envisioned is, they're just running at you. And when you play at the Benz in Atlanta, you're thinking, I can't take this train. This train is running at full speed. How do we defend? Because they're coming at you and they're relentless. We haven't seen that. So can they get back to that style of play, which is really attack-minded, looking to counter and just allowing Joseph Martinez to get on the ball and often.
And you saw a little, you're starting to see the layoffs from him, right? Like now that he's scoring, now that teams are scared of him again, now he has space to start to create for his teammates and all that stuff. So exciting stuff for Atlanta. Toronto continues to be a dead weight, dropping to the bottom of the Eastern Conference. It is worrying times for TFC. It might be a little bit too late, even if they were able to turn things around. But talking about turning things around, talking about slumping sides, you mentioned Columbus when you were talking about the Eastern Conference in the playoffs. They went on the road. They lost to the Red Bulls. We'll talk about the Red Bulls a little bit more because they've got a huge New York derby game coming up this weekend. But for Columbus, they are now outside the playoff spots. This is a team that I said could be one of the best returning MLS Cup champions in history. And none of that has been true. How worried are you about this Crew side?
Extremely worried. I mean, if you can go back to literally June 19th was like their one convincing win against the Fire. Then they lose to Philly. They tie Austin. They tie New England. They tie Cincy. They beat New York City FC, which is a good win, 2-1. But then they tie Nashville. They lose to Atlanta. They lose 4-1 to New York City FC. Then they lose 4-2 to DC. Then they lose to Atlanta. And then they lose to the Crew. And then they lose to Red Bull. Yes, I would be extremely worried. And had they not won MLS Cup last year, Caleb Porter would be on the hot seat right now. So, I mean, and their next match doesn't get any easier. It's against the Seattle Sounders. So if you lose, now they've lost 4 in a row, 5 in a row.
Yeah.
This could be 6 in a row.
Yes.
Very well.
So you mentioned those score lines. They've been outscored 13-5. So it's both sides, right? The attack has been woeful throughout this season. And then you had a weak stretch where the defense was awful, giving up 5, 4, and 3 goals in 3 separate games in about 8 days, which is rough. And now they've been 1-0 losses the last 2 times. But I think that's the most worrying part to me is there's not one fix. And while they've had a ton of injuries, I don't know that one person coming back fixes this, because if it's Arthur, maybe, because he goes both ways. But if it's Milton Valenzuela, does that help you defensively? Does that help you in the attack? Either way, they're off on both ends of the field. And that's what's frustrating, watching a team that was a legit MLS Cup champion last year.
And, you know, I think they've tinkered, you know, with the formation, the lineup, the players, and nothing has worked. And I think defensively, you have to get that right first to allow Nagby to get on the ball and control the tempo. Because Nagby has scored some great goals, but we know what Nagby is. He's a player who relieves pressure, and he can move the ball from one side of the pitch to the other. You need to be able to, one, defend, prevent people from breaking you down, keeping possession, and 3, being able to win the ball in transition and attack. And Jossie Zardes hasn't looked strong this year with the Crew. Bradley Wright Phillips he needs to have service, and he needs to be in the box. They haven't had the ball for him to even get those opportunities. And then the wing play has been relatively weak. So every area, every facet of the game, the Crew have to improve drastically to give themselves a shot at this year in getting into the playoffs.
I've gotten 0 from Molino still. He came in hurt. Then he had a chunk with the national team. You thought that might be the fix. He has not finished for them at all. He hasn't been the goal dangerous player he was with Minnesota. You mentioned the wings, Luis Diaz as well. They haven't gotten much from him this year. Matan, a 22-under-22 player. There wasn't a ton of expectations, but with all these injuries, you'd hope you'd get something out of him to kind of keep you afloat. And Pedro Santos has played left back mainly for the bulk of this season. And he was the guy last year when Zelarayán was out that was able to continue the attack going forward. I mentioned Joe Lowry's piece on MLSsoccer.com. Go check that out. He talks about the issues in the attack. And he said, when you look back, the XG wasn't that high last year. And one of the things with this team is they're not around the box that often. You mentioned Nagby. A lot of the play is deeper in midfield. And they're not able to actually access the box. And then now we've got these injuries at the wing position. And Zelarayan's been less efficient this year, especially on the dribble. So he's losing the ball as he gets into the final third, zone 14. Nagby's not a player who's going to break you down and create in those spots. And then they don't even have Arthur. So Liam Fraser or Perry Kitchen, when he was healthy, those guys aren't even helping in that space at all. So it's been a huge downgrade in the attack right now for Columbus. And Caleb Porter, unfortunately, has a little bit of a history with super successful seasons. Best team in the West, winning MLS Cup in Portland, now winning MLS Cup in Columbus. He normally misses the postseason the year after that. And right now they are on pace to do that. As you mentioned, five straight games with a loss, which is shocking to see for this Columbus group. Let's move on in the Midwest a little. I hope that's correct, but I'm not sure. In Nashville, Nashville-Orlando, 1-1. CJ Sapong again, fourth goal in three games. He gets the steal. He leads the break on this one, lays it off, gets it back, and still has the finish. Nine goals in 1,200 minutes this season. Obviously, Ake Loba and Jander Cadiz, the two DPs, now rooted to the bench. Cadiz not even making the bench every single game with the way Sapong's playing. And we got a tweet from a Mr. Josh Wisenhunt, who used to work with us at MLS a bunch of years back. And Charlie, you're going to love it. And he said, has everyone been talking about CJ Sapong as the immediate answer for the USMNT up top and I'm just missing it? What's going on with that silence? Seems like he's literally unplayable right now and World Cup qualifying starts in 15 days. But what do I know? Now, Giassi Zardes limped off the field after 20 minutes against the Red Bulls. It looks like a hamstring injury. I believe PFOC went off with an injury against Young Boys this week as well in Champions League qualifying. And then there's also rumors that Christian Pulisic might be dealing with a knock, not a center forward related, although he could play there as a false nine. CJ Sapong, get a shot here? Does he get in this combo, Charlie?
No, he does not.
Nice, quick.
Yeah. So, you know, it's one of those positions where we're still trying to figure out who is that player. And if PFOC is out and, you know, you have some other issues with other strikers.
Sounds like DK's hurt as well.
Right. I think that's apparent after the Gold Cup and his stock went down because of it. So I think Josh Sargent obviously is your guy right now. And CJ Sapong's 32 years old, right? What Greg Berhalter has done and stuck by throughout this process is making sure he's building for the future, right?
Okay.
You're going to say no?
No, I'm listening. I'm listening, then I'm going to respond.
Okay. Yes. He's building for the future, and he's building a team that's about culture, that understands his formation and the style of play and the philosophy. And he's trying to make sure that the guys who are playing in that number nine position are set up to succeed. And I think when you look at some of the guys that have played there, you know, Joaquini is another player who has impressed at times in Gold Cup and, you know, scored, I think, a brace in his first start with the U.S. men's national team in Europe. That's another player that can play in that nine spot. So Josh Sargent, if Zardes is out, you have Joaquini. And then you start looking at false nine. But we all know how I feel about the false nine.
So
I think I don't think that CJ Sapong is the answer.
Okay. So Giassi Zardes was never about the future, right? He was about getting results now when he's a part of the national team. Well, he's not
debatable in the sense that for the World Cup.
For sure, but he's 30 plus. He's not for the future.
But they've also had a relationship that dates back to the Columbus Crew and all the success he had. And CJ Sapong is not on that level of success in MLS like Giassi Zardes.
Not at all. But going into World Cup qualifying, you named one center forward, a young player who plays in the French second division, Matthew Hoppe, who isn't playing right now either.
But that's another player who had a start.
Right, but isn't I think he's hurt right now with Schalke either way. Mm-hmm. And he's never played center forward for Greg. And then you're looking at a bunch of false nines. You are going to El Salvador. You are going to Honduras. I always assumed that Zardes would start one of those games as a veteran presence. CJ Sapong is the highest scoring American in MLS right now. Form matters at this position. Experience matters in these games. And I think to show up to World Cup qualifying for three games with a Josh Sargent who's never played in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying before and a bunch of false nines is dangerous. Yep. And if Zardes is hurt, how can you close the door on a guy who's leading Nashville right now, who has them second in the Eastern Conference, and has been the best goal-scoring American? That's all I'm saying.
I'm just telling you, from a quality standpoint, I don't think CJ Sapong is the answer for the U.S. Men's
but
National Team.
You don't need an answer.
I would any type of situation.
Any question I ask, even if I ask, who's the best American with the first letter C who has a two-letter first name right now as a goal scorer for the national team, it still wouldn't be CJ Sapong.
I would say if you're looking for another type of striker, I would go with Mason Toy.
Interesting.
If you're talking about a different type of player who offers you something, Mason Toy has had, I think, a stronger season with Montreal than years past. Obviously, I think this is his best year in a season in a long time. He has shown potential. I think still a lot of work needs to be done with his mentality. I think I've seen too many instances where, you know, whether it's he putting his head down or his reactions are not where they need to be as far as like being a team player, being someone that, you know, you want in the locker room. I think that has to improve. I think it has, but not to the level it needs to be. So with that being said, we all know the striker position needs to get stronger for the U.S. men's national team. That is something that it's constantly being looked at.
But I'm not talking big picture. I am saying that in 3 weeks, you have three World Cup qualifiers in a short time span. Mm-hmm. Sargent can't start them all. He's never done it before. And CJ Sapong right now is the hottest American at that position. And even if he can't score, he's a physical presence. He knows how to run the front line. He knows how to occupy guys to make life easier for a Pulisic and a Weah and Gio Reyna and an Aronson, whoever it is that sits behind him. So, Josh, I don't disagree with you. Shout out for that text because it pissed Charlie off, which I love, and made my day. And then shout out to Nashville because I said it. He's helping lead them. I don't think we were expecting Nashville would be second in the Eastern Conference right now. And when you watched the game against Orlando last night, at 1-1, they went for it like they were losing. Zimmerman was up in the box. Washington was up in the box. They're chucking balls forward. So they know that they've dropped home points the way their schedule has been loaded. And this is probably a little bit of a false dawn with them sitting in second place. But it's still been a phenomenal season so far. And they have really grown as an attacking team and have been a lot more fun to watch.
Well, I'll be the first person to say, wow, from Nashville and the way they attack from last year. What a difference. And I know Gary Smith and even Mike Jacobs wanted to make sure that this was a team that was exciting to watch, that they played an attractive brand of soccer, right? And so I think they've done that. I think it took them a while to get those pieces ready. But what I like about CJ Sapong is you don't have to be a DP player to be playing, right? Like he's really the third choice when it comes to like the salary and expectations as a striker to start this year. And you buy Aki Loba because you think CJ Sapong can't do it. But CJ Sapong, on the other hand, says, hold on a second. I'm not done. I'm not here to be a third striker. I'm here to play and be on the field. And he's producing. And he's enjoying the game. And you could tell the players love playing with him because he's that kind of player. He's not a selfish striker. He's one that just does his job, does the work, both sides of the ball. And he's really difficult to play against. He's super strong, good movement, and can finish when given the opportunity. And he's proving it. So the fact that he's He's got two well-paid strikers sitting on the bench because of his performance is great. I love to see that as well.
I think to that point, you know, he's got his goal celebration. He does the hands and the bow to the crowd. And I think it was Mukhtar and someone else who ran up next to him to do it alongside him in his goal celebration because they were so excited to see him do his thing. 1-1 draw there for Nashville. Let's mention a couple of these other games that happened. There was a ton of big results over the course of this midweek. Vancouver beats Austin 2-1. The Scottish Messi, Ryan Gauld, with the assist on the winning goal to Brian White, could have actually scored one himself as well, but that's fine. Caps riding a 7-game unbeaten streak. So for starters, congrats to Vancouver on that. Mainly congrats to Vancouver because after, I believe it's over 545 days away from BC Place, they will play their first home game this Saturday against LAFC in their stadium. So tip of the cap to everyone in Vancouver who's dealt with this, gone through this, fought through this, almost made the playoffs last year, had a bright performance at MLS's back. And then this year, ending that with a win and a 7-game unbeaten streak is really cool to see in Gauld. He seems like the real deal. Obviously, no Cavallini in front of him, but Brian White gets the goal, which is huge to see as well. But we still have to hit on Austin, who are last place in the Western Conference. They're the expansion team, Q2 Stadium. The environment's great. We thought it would push them along after they survived through the away games, and it has not been the case. Charlie, they have this may have been their worst performance so far this year. Are Austin and the playoffs dead? I struggle to say that because of what we just talked about with Atlanta, where it's like it can turn around pretty quickly. But was this the final straw for them this season?
Dead in the water. Austin, dead in the water. Vancouver is as good as they have been as of late, dead in the water. and I'm willing to say Houston as well, dead in the water. Those three teams, not making the playoffs. Dallas still has a shot. San Jose still has a shot. LAFC, I can't believe I'm saying this, still has a shot. I mean, what? How are they not in the playoffs right now? Shocking. But I think for Austin, they need to find some pieces to really allow them to be competitive. The striker position, which I would have thought Josh Wolf, being a former striker himself, would make sure I got to have somebody who's going to, we can depend on, who's going to be a game changer, score goals, one who's very active with runs along the back line. They don't have that. And that's really important for this team. And I'd also say along the back line, you need to have a strong center back. They need a strong center back and they need a strong striker. Once those two pieces come in, they'll give themselves a real shot to be a threat in the Western Conference.
Now, there was a bit of a model with LAFC of they brought in Marco Arana to start their time. I don't think he scored a goal for the first 4 or 5 months, and they were a playoff team. They had Carlos Vela and Diego Rossi on the wing. Last night, Cecilio Domínguez started this game, and Josh Wolf pulled him off the field 28 minutes in because he was too out of shape for them to play the brand they wanted to play, and brought on John Gallagher. That is the polar opposite from a DP winger of what you got from Vela for LAFC. And so they don't have a center forward, and the talent that they have accumulated, Rodney Redes hasn't made a difference this season. Even if he's one for the future, you need something in year one. And now Cecilio Domínguez is literally getting pulled out because he has gotten out of shape as the season has gone along. And
that's not a good look.
There are rumors that he's been sick, so that could be a part of it. But as you said, it has not been good enough. Moussa Diété, the 22-22 striker, which I think was the point. Put him at center forward, play Druisi alongside Pochettino, and have a bunch of creative ability behind a guy like that. He took forever to get in the country. Now it sounds like he's finally on the ground, but he still needs to get in the building and still needs to get on the field for them. It sounds like you believe it'll be a little bit too late, though.
Yes, it is. Dead in the water.
Dead in the water.
Like, even no matter how many, all right, you hear from the Minister of Culture himself, it is too late. It is too late.
I believe that I now have to take an L. I'm supposed to be dead in the water, but I refuse to, Charlie. I refuse to back down.
Who in their right mind would ever say that you, Goss Empire, would ever be dead in the water? Not me.
Well,
I promise you that.
So part of the thing that I ripped on, ragged on, whatever term you want to use, for rivalry week, or sorry, rivalry week, I read what Anders wrote and said the wrong thing, for the Portland Timbers was, I don't think Felipe Mora is a starting MLS center forward. And he wasn't brought in to be, but they let Jeremy Obobese go. Obviously, Nia Shkoda is still coming back from the ACL tear. Those are the options. Right. He has 5 goals in his last 7 games. So I'm supposed to take an L on that. I will not. I will not back down. It's great that he's been finishing. It's huge for the Timbers. They put out not their strongest side. They get a result at SKC, which is a big midweek game for them. But he is purely a fox in the box guy. And in big moments, in big games, he has not scored. It's great that he is carrying them now. That's what they need. But with Nia Shkoda coming back from an ACL, he's going to have to be the starter this year in the playoffs. And I don't think he's that level of player you talked about with the Rapids. Now, they might have that outside of him with Blanco and Valeri and Jimmy Chara that it may not matter. Fair. But we shall see for them. We'll talk more about SKC coming up. They've got a big rivalry week game. Seattle, 1-0 win down in Dallas. As Anders writes it, this is the Texas formula. The Sounders start the kids. Rui Diaz comes off the bench, finishes it off. Last time, it was the absurd goal in Austin. This time, pretty nice as well. Gets his own rebound and then curls it into the top right corner to the point where it almost didn't cross the line. He hit it so cleanly. And Steve Zakuani wrote this up in his piece, but no Sounders player has ever scored 20-plus goals in an MLS regular season. With all the greats they've had, Rui Diaz now at 14, seems like he'll get there, and he'll probably get there pretty quickly. He's the Golden Boot leader. Does this mean Rui Diaz is the best forward in Seattle Sounders history if he breaks that?
No. I love Rui Diaz. I love his attitude, his skill set, his ability to really hurt you in a variety of different ways. I think a lot of people thought he's only a box striker, he can combine. He can shoot from outside. He's creative. He'll chip keepers. There's a lot to his game, and I think it stems from playing with that chip on your shoulder and like never settling. That's what you get from Rui Diaz, and he has a little like creative brilliance to him. At first I thought, okay, a little rough around the edges, but very direct. I think he's adapted since joining MLS, and really, really talented. I enjoy watching him play. But, Obafemi Martins, are you kidding me? I mean, the guy, that Oba Deuce connection 2014, Oba just could hurt you in so many ways. Every defender, not that they don't do this for Rui Diaz, but was like, oh, geez. I got to play against Obafemi today because he was so strong, a little bit stronger than than Rui Diaz. And Raul Rui Diaz is very strong for his size, small, short, stout player. But Obafemi just had that explosion, right, that I don't think Rui Diaz necessarily has. And then, could also have, chip you from distance combined, a great soccer brain. And they're two all-star strikers, like two phenomenal strikers. Any club would be lucky to have two players with their quality. But with that being said, I think Obafemi was just really a notch ahead of any striker.
So Obafemi Martin's best season, I think, was 17 goals, 13 assists that 2014 year. So obviously didn't break 20 goals, but 13 assists is a massive number alongside those goals. Raul Rui Diaz, 10 playoff games. You know the stats, Charlie. 10 playoff games.
I do know the stats.
What's the numbers?
9 goals and 3 assists.
6 assists.
Oh, 6 assists.
Uh-huh.
Absolute legend. So, I mean, he's a beast. He's a beast. And
he's done it without Ladero this year, which is...
Right. And I know there's a number of Sounders fans will say, Obafemi didn't do it, when the club needed him to do it in the playoffs, right? And phenomenal stats. And then the argument to Robbie Keane is same type of stats, goals and assists, both double digits. And but Robbie Keane would do it in the playoffs, right? When he, when you're talking about all time,
I was like, well, how did Robbie Keane sneak in here?
No, just like all time strikers within MLS, like foreign.
Right. Because he owned Seattle enough in the playoffs that you could argue he was a center forward.
But and you'd also say Freddie Montero in his day, right, with the Sounders. I'm surprised that neither Obafemi or Montero hit 20 goals. But Raul Diaz is an absolute problem, a problem that I think any club, when you're looking at the Seattle Sounders, you're facing. It's not just Ladero who can hurt you, and or Jordan Morris. Rui Diaz is one of the best strikers the league has ever seen.
Well, Anders will do us a favor. He'll jump in at some point and tell us who picked Rui Diaz as Golden Boot winner when we did our preseason picks, and then who's probably leading right now. I can't figure it out. I can't remember, but
I'm pretty sure I did that too.
Oh, yeah, so. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I did.
No, I picked Rui Diaz.
I did too.
No, but we had the draft. I don't think you were on that episode. In our draft, I got Rui Diaz. I don't remember
who my... Remember I backed you up about Rui Diaz, though somebody else was...
We're always on the same side. Don't worry.
I know.
Yeah.
All right.
We both got truth on our side. So let's move to Miami real quick. 3-2 win at home. Three straight home wins. Second stoppage time winner. They now host Toronto coming up. Then they travel to Orlando for part two of our Heineken rivalry coming up. Mm-hmm. In about a week. So we'll hit them more next week. We've got plenty of preview coverage coming about those games. It's going to be a huge one. Congrats to Miami for having some fun moments. You saw the atmosphere in the stadium.
Do they make the playoffs this year?
I do not think so. But I think they come out of this year feeling better than they did going into the year. And that's a positive for that club. Let's close out the midweek with who else? The New England Revolution, 3-2 win. Over DC United, Charlie.
Give it to me. Give me those stats, please.
Here's your space to go. Tejan comes off the bench. Back-to-back games with a goal now that Heal is out. And the Revs are sitting on 46 points. Now, they have played the most games in the league. But even with games in hand, no one can be within 3 points of them. Right now, the Revs have been the best team in MLS quite clearly.
Quite clearly.
But not at the start of this game.
No. Well, they also rotated players.
Okay.
And so what had happened in the first half was you played Wilfred Kaptoum and Maciel, both similar in the way they play the game. Sit back. They're not really defensive-minded midfielders, so neither of them really are strong winning the ball back for the club. They're not midfielders who get in advanced positions all that much. And so when you have two players who are pretty, casual on the ball, DC just overloaded the midfield, won all the second balls, won all the challenges, and put the Revs on their heels at home, which was a shock to me. And then Teal Bunbury didn't take his chance, didn't have a great performance. Arnar Trusisson has not looked good for the Revs this year. There's been flashes, Inter Miami game away, but other than that, I think for the expectations that he had coming in, hasn't really met them. And so Bruce Arena, doing what he does best, said, okay, how do we get back into this game? And so halftime made three crucial substitutions. One, Adam Buksa, who just got called into the Polish national team for World Cup qualifiers. That should tell you something. Emma Boateng, who we haven't seen too much of this season, comes in on the left side, and Tejan Buchanan, the rising star, actually a star in Major League Soccer right now, has come in and just literally they flipped the game upside down. It was the definition of tale of two halves. First half didn't look like a team that is competing for, supporters, let alone the playoffs. And then in the second half, they looked like we are the Supporter Shield leaders. We are chasing not only Supporter Shield, but MLS Cup, and they played that way. And what Adam Buksa does so well this year is he formed a partnership with Gustavo Bo up top. And so they play well off each other, but the consistency of Adam Buksa winning the ball, aerial challenges, hold-up play, combination play, and then getting in the box. So now when balls are being whipped in, you have someone who typically wins his duel or drags one or two center backs out of position to create space. They have looked really dangerous down the flanks. they were able to play with the width of Buchanan and Emma Boateng. They have pace, and then they were able to pull DC apart. And when you're pulling Birnbaum, Adoy Achum, and Briant out of position, they don't have the pace to deal with that and get out to the touchline. It was really just lopsided. So, I mean, you talk about, we always talk about players and coaches making in-game adjustments. Doesn't always happen. This was apparent. Bruce was dialed in and made the right substitutions.
So apologies from Extra Time to DC United. We interviewed Hernan Losada when you were on a high, and you have now lost back-to-back games since then to Chicago and the Revs. We take that L. Also,
he was so good too.
Yeah, and they were playing well. Also, I didn't mention when we were talking about CJ Spang, the center forward, I mentioned those injuries. Paul Arriola also scores early in this game, comes off with an injury. Obviously has dealt with a ton of injury, a player you'd assume would have been on the roster. So again, that depth thinning a little bit for the U.S. men's national team going into this World Cup qualifying cycle. DC will hopefully look to turn things around this weekend, which is Heineken Rivalry Week. We are back, baby. Kicks off Friday night with LA Galaxy versus San Jose. Cali Classico will be on ESPN2 and then continues this weekend with two more games on national TV. This is all part one. Part two comes up after the All-Star game. So you've got Heineken Rivalry Week on Friday night. You've got Heineken Rivalry Week coming up for the rest of the weekend. On Saturday, you've got Minnesota United versus Sporting KC on ESPN, and you've got the New York Derby. On top of that, you've got some other great games that are part of this weekend. Tuesday night, you've got the Skills Challenge. Wednesday night, you have the first time ever MLS All-Stars against League MX All-Stars, the moment I have been waiting for since I was 14
I know
or
that.
15.
Oh, I know that.
This is hype. And then you follow that up with another rivalry week where you've got Orlando, Miami, you've got Toronto, Montreal, you've got Seattle, Portland closing out that whole weekend. This is like 8 days to feast for Major League Soccer. We have waited quite a long time. We have earned it. Let's start with the Cali Classico first. 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN2. The Galaxy hosts San Jose. We talked a little bit about Colorado, knocked off the Galaxy on the road. And then on the flip side for San Jose, they are coming in, Charlie, on the largest unbeaten streak in Major League Soccer at 9 games. 2 of them are wins. So not that many points, but 9 unbeaten. How do you see this matchup playing out on Friday night?
That's a compelling case when you say, oh, we've been unbeaten for 9. How many wins? 2. Oh. Not that great.
And Nathan, who has been starting at center back, got a red card in the last game, so he will be suspended as well.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the league and what San Jose has been able to do, I'm not convinced.
Yeah.
They're so up and down, right? So sometimes you feel like they're having the better of the game, but for the most part, I feel like it's wild. They're a wild card. You never know what you're going to get from San Jose. So I think with that being said, it's not, I think, something that is going to be consistent.
So for the Galaxy, they lose at home 2-1. Chicharito's been out since July 4th. Another setback that we heard about a week and a half ago. We have not seen him since. So he's missed about 8 games. The Galaxy have played well in stretches or at least gotten results in those 8 games since he's been out. A loss to the Rapids this week. Let's say it's not a win against San Jose. Is there anything for the Galaxy that they need to prove without Chicharito to you? Or is it all their MLS Cup chances rest on can he get healthy and get back into this team?
I think at this stage, it rests on Chicharito getting back with the team if they want to win MLS Cup this year. They need him to be on the pitch. They need that goal scorer, and then you surround him with Cabral and Griencier and players who are game changers, right? Who can create opportunities for him. So I think that's the only way that LA Galaxy really have a shot at MLS Cup this year is with Chicharito on the pitch.
So there's nothing that they can do without him to prove to you that they can win this thing if he's not healthy.
Correct.
Okay. I think that's fair. We've obviously seen Revolution be the dynamic number six goal scorer that we've always expected from all these teams, and a few good performances from Cabral and Grancier as well. But it feels like their MLS Cup chances probably hinge on that one. Cali Clásico, it's always wild. Almeida as well. So you know this one's going to be off the chain.
Yeah.
Friday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN2. And if you're, of course, in the LA area, get out to Dignity Health Sporting Park as well. Then on Saturday, we follow it up. The opening rivalry week game is Minnesota United hosting Sporting Kansas City on ESPN and ESPN Deportes. That one, 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. We've got a Minnesota team coming off a 1-1 draw at San Jose, part of that unbeaten run. They went up a man early. We're not able to get the win. On the flip side, SKC, dramatic comeback at home against Portland. And Charlie, I think you've been fairly impressed with this SKC attack as maybe one of the best in the league.
I have. As long as Alan Pulido is healthy, this team has a shot, because Daniel Shalloway right now is playing the best of his career, his young career. Johnny Russell and Alan Pulido, those three are dynamic, interchangeable. They can cause so many problems. They combined well. The movement off the ball, I think, has been strong. So they're a team that I think has a really good shot in the Western Conference.
Minnesota, on the flip side, tried to rotate pieces, trying to find a way to get Gregouche back into this team. Has not worked so well for him. But Will Trapp gets the goal in this one. Dotson gets the start out wide. So a few moving pieces right now for Adrian Heath's side. But I think a lot of promise, a lot of excitement around this Minnesota United team. What do they call it? The friendliest rivalry in the country or
would you,
in MLS?
Would you think?
Well, there's like a room. There's the cliche that the Midwest is friendly and Minnesota is everyone's nice. Kansas City, I don't know. We would need Weeby for that. And Weeby, when he found out that he had to do 35 minutes on NYCFC to start the episode, he decided to just not show up today. And, right. And he didn't get an all-star jersey. I think people in KC are sitting out front of his
place. We got it.
Exactly.
We got it. That's all that matters.
They're just picking off packages outside of Weeby's house because they know Anders is sending him swag left and right.
Or he just tossed his brother a jersey. He's like, I got you.
Wow. If anyone is at a Sporting KC game in the next week or two and they see Joel Weeby in an all-star jersey.
If you
see
Joel Weeby with an all-star jersey, you know exactly what happened. And then he's going to say, I didn't know he came over and just swiped it off my balcony. Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
And we'll see Andrew Weeby in LA at some point, we hope, but you never know with him. Following up, Saturday night. This is the big one, I think. 8 p.m. Eastern time, New York at Red Bull Arena. FS1 and Fox Deportes. And let's start with the New York Red Bulls. They get the win over Columbus 1-0, their first win in seven games. And this is the start of a four-game homestand. They've got NYCFC here. They play Chicago after that at home. And then they play another team at home that I can't remember off the top of my head right now. If they're going to make the playoff push, Charlie, it has to happen right now. And they got the start that they needed.
You're right. It has to happen right now. Because otherwise, we're going to be talking about Den the Water pretty soon. And that'll be the Red Bulls. And I know you've seen them up close and personal. I know you're a huge fan of RB2.
The squad.
The squad. This team needs to really improve. Every time I watch them play, I feel like, okay, they're going to turn the corner here. Caden Clark gets on the ball. He's looked good at times. But then they don't play to their strengths. Like Patrick Klamala and Fabio, I thought those are two players who can really hurt you if you give them opportunities. And I don't think they've played with enough of a direction to allow those two to perform at the highest level. So one, their back line has been really weak. I think when they played three in the back, Nealis has gotten exposed a number of times. I think Amro Tarek has been exposed a good amount of times. And Andres Reyes has looked good, but then would get a red card for a foolish tackle.
He got pulled at halftime against Columbus. They did get the shutout, but I think it was the Zardes chance through. It was because he kind of went fishing on the long ball. And like threw his leg up at midfield, missed it, and that's what allowed it to bounce through for Zardes. After that, though, they moved Gutman in. They slide Tolkien out to left wing back. They'd already scored the goal, but I think the attack looked a little bit more cohesive.
I've also liked Wiki Carmona.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's got something to him. So if this team can put it all together with the talent that they have, I could see them, you know, making a run in the playoffs. But these next three games at home, they have to get, I'd say, 7 out of 9.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. This feels like the run. This feels like the chance for the New York Red Bulls. There still seems to be belief in the group. Struber talked about it after the game. A lot of the players on the field as well. Carlos Coronel made a couple big saves. So I think there's still belief in this group. And this is an opportunity to show that to everyone. And I think on the flip side for NYCFC, you talked about it. We know there's talent in this team. We know they're good. They're a playoff team. That's already been decided. The mm-hmm. only thing left to learn is, can they win in the postseason and be an MLS Cup threat? And I think this is similar to what we saw with Philly last year, which was, we have no past to base it off to believe that you do. The only ways you can prove that is in these big build-up games that we sort of treat like a playoff moment. For Philly last year was when they hosted Toronto. Then they had the Revs to close out Supporters Shield. They won both those games, and it felt like, okay, this was a young group that's mature enough and ready to win in these moments. And then on the flip side now, I think you look at NYCFC and you say, well, we know you could beat, you know, Miami at home midweek. We know you can put up goals. As you mentioned, we know that backline solidified. But to me, Charlie, this is a chance for them to show that they can win a big moment, big game, and be a contender in the playoffs.
Agreed. They have far too much talent to not be pushing for an MLS Cup, to be honest. So in order for them to do that, though, you need to start winning these big games. And yes, the Red Bulls aren't as good as they typically are, but you need to win that game. So for New York City FC, if you want to continue to say, hey, we're actually a team that's got the quality, we know we have the quality, and we're playing well, we have our identity down. I think Ronny Deila finally understands the league and understands his team. And so now you got to go out and prove it, because otherwise you're going to get steamrolled in the playoffs as per usual, like Toronto did last year or the year before. So this is something that I want to see New York City FC, given that, you know, you have Tati Castellanos, you have a Maxi Morales, you have Jesus Medina, you have Santiago, and you have Thiago. I mean, those are all players who can hurt teams on their day.
So with the Rapids, you told me they didn't have that one guy.
Yeah.
Does NYCFC have that one guy? Is Tati that guy?
Yes, I think Tati is that guy. But you also have a couple of other guys who can, like, basically help Tati in scoring those goals and doing it in a variety of different ways. So I see New York City FC having the right pieces to the puzzle to win an MLS Cup, whereas I think Colorado still need a couple pieces.
Okay. Yeah, they've got the back line. They've got the number 10 in Maxi, who has the experience, and then they've got a ton of pieces in the attack. This one's going to be so much fun to watch at Red Bull Arena and, of course, on TV, FS1 and Fox Deportes, 8 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday night. That closes out our part one of Heineken Rivalry Week. And then, as I said, the following weekend, we will continue with part two. For you and me, let's hit some ESPN Plus games that we're excited about. And they also happen to be rivalry games as well, but in a different space. So El Capitan, 8:30 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday, Houston Dynamo hosting FC Dallas. That one on ESPN Plus, both teams coming off heartbreaking losses. Houston, I thought, outplayed RSL in Salt Lake, tied 1-1, pushing for the second. And then Anderson Julio comes off the bench and scores in the dying moments to give RSL the win. And then FC Dallas, another one at home against Seattle. We said it. It's the kids. They push. They had chances. They had looks, could not score. And then Rui Diaz comes off the bench and crushes them. So you said dead in the water for a few teams. I don't think you said Dallas in your list of dead in the water sides. It seems like they had revived themselves the last few weeks. This is probably a game, though, where Houston, I still think, is in the race. But for Dallas, you got to try and find a way to sneak 3 points on the road against the rival.
You do. And I think Houston is dead in the water.
Charlie's just ripping rudders out, chains. He's walking away with everything. He's just leaving boats floating.
But I do think they're dead in the water. I think for FC Dallas, though, we have seen them kind of resurge, I'd say. And there's a new belief. It's unfortunate that Paxton Pomykal went down again with an injury. I think he was just coming into his own and changed the dynamic of this FC Dallas side. But Ricardo Pepi and Jesus Ferreira looks a little bit better too. They played against Seattle Sounders. They're the second best team in the league. So I think from that standpoint, it's kind of expected that you lose to, whether you're playing at home or away, you're playing against the second best team in Major League Soccer. So again, a game against Houston Dynamo, on the other hand, you better win. If this is a team that is meant to compete and get into the playoffs, you need to win this game. So I think for FC Dallas, there's nothing less than 3 points that will suit this club.
Sorry, I muted myself. Huge week.
You muted yourself. I was like, what the?
Huge week next week as well, because they play Austin FC. So Copa Tejas, both of these matchups, both of them on the road for Dallas. But as you said, that renewed belief a little bit in them. And then Saturday night closes up with the Rocky Mountain Cup. I said it, the Rapids, they're in that tier for me. 9 p.m. Eastern time, they host Salt Lake. Salt Lake has dominated this rivalry. Salt Lake has won back-to-back games now. It hasn't been pretty. I was a little let down from against Austin FC that once they went man up, they weren't able to put the final nail in the coffin and score a couple more goals. And then this week, I thought they were on the back foot, as I said, a lot against Houston, but they're able to come out and get enough. And it feels like, Charlie, there's a level of belief in this RSL group. And this is a fun matchup to see. Can they go to Colorado, maybe sit a little deeper, make Colorado pull them apart, and then have space to hit on the counter through a Krylak, through a Rubin, through Wood, Anderson, Julio, whoever's out there. This could be a tricky game for the Rapids and a spot where we've seen RSL in the past, even when they're down, be able to pull the Rapids back.
Yes, I think for RSL, they have some good pieces, right? They have Krylak. I think Everton Luiz doesn't get enough credit for how good he is and the amount of ground he covers per match. Bobby Wood is one of those players who
it's an American
is trying
striker.
He's trying to get back, you know, his form that saw him, you know, have some good moments with the U.S. men's national team. Can he kind of rediscover that with this RSL side? And I think another player that I've really liked is Aaron Herrera.
Yeah.
So I think the big question mark with this RSL team is when they do get in those gritty battles, do they have enough character to win those games? And then the goalkeeper position, I think Zach McMath has had some questionable decision-making in his time. So can he overcome those and stand on his head when the time comes? Because RSL are going to need a keeper to keep them in matches if they are to go on a run. And Rubio Rubin has also been a pleasant signing for RSL. I think he's come in and added to the attacking core. So I know Brian Dunseth gets super happy as soon as we talk about RSL because he's like, you know, he's got the RSL tat on his chest. He said, obviously, this team, it looks a lot better.
Yeah.
They're in a much better place than they were in previous seasons.
I think this is a playoff team. I've said it a couple times. I said last week coming into the weekend, my ESPN Plus game was them because I thought this was a chance to turn the corner. Two straight wins is that. Not as convincing as I'd like to see. But with them, it's a different piece every game that plays well. And Freddy Juarez's challenge right now is, can you get all the right guys in the starting lineup game in and game out? Because even if it's Wood one game, it's Rubin the next game. How do you make it all work? It'll be interesting to see. That's a huge one coming up. So that closes it out. So rivalry week part one, Friday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, ESPN2, Cali Classico. And then Saturday, two rivalry week games, Minnesota United versus Sporting KC on ESPN at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time in ESPN Deportes. And then New York, New York, 8 p.m. Eastern time on FS1 and Fox Deportes. Let's get to the mailbag. And Ken asks, and you kind of just talked about him, DC supporter here. Thanks for the recent Losada interview, which he's now regretting because they lost again since we've done it. However, I'm curious if you could talk a little about Paxton Pomykal's season so far, and if you think he could get the long-rumored European transfer. As you mentioned, knee injury didn't appear this week. We have not heard that it's very bad yet, but with Paxton Pomykal, I think you're always going to have a little bit of trepidation whenever he goes out. But Charlie, we're starting to see flashes of the player that he was. Mm-hmm. What does his career arc look like if he, let's say this is a short-term injury and he comes back? Is he on Dallas next year? How does it look for him now?
Yes, I think he needs a full season. Mm-hmm. A full season of performing at a high level before he makes that move. Because we've always heard and we've seen flashes of what Paxton Pomykal is capable of. But you have to be able to prove that you can do it throughout the course of a season. Until he does that, he's not leaving FC Dallas unless his contract runs out and then a European team takes a chance on him. So I think with that being said, when you're talking about a purchase, he needs to play a full season at the very least before he makes a move to Europe. And I do agree, just seeing him in a Youth World Cup, He's performed at a level where he's comparable to any player in his position in the world for his age. So there's talent there. There's a lot of potential there. But in order to meet that, you have to stay healthy. And we've seen that with a number of young, talented players. Can they find a good balance and find a rhythm and stay on the pitch? So I think from that standpoint, we can see Paxton Pomykal in Europe and playing on the national team at a very high level, but he has to stay healthy. And sometimes there's nothing you can do. It's out of your control. And then there's things that you can do to try and manage that. And just to shout out NOSA Radio in Massachusetts, there's one person in particular, Gus, who's a huge fan of the show, huge fan of yours, Gus. He wanted me to give you a shout out from him.
Wow.
I saw him yesterday. He said, I listen to the show all the time, producing Anders. I love when he gets called out, and I'm a huge fan of Goss.
Nice.
David Goss. So NOSA Radio, repping the Portuguese radio for the revolution. He said, hey, this show is legit, and keep going.
Well, I say obrigado, because I'm so worldly and cultured on that one.
You are cultured.
Paxton Pomykal, by the way, signed a new deal after the U20 World Cup, 4-year deal with a club option all the way through 2024. So he's got some time in Dallas, as you said.
Yep.
And it feels like he can do his thing. I want to ask a mailbag question following up on that, though, because you've been through long-term injuries. Mentally.
I have.
surprise. I'm actually sorry to really bring you down today and have you find that out.
Oh, yeah.
But I talked to someone about Paxton, and they said there's a level of almost like PTSD with once you've been hurt, every time you feel a little something, you don't know how bad it is, and then you don't know how to take care of your body. How long does it take for a guy like that who is out for basically a year to really feel comfortable with your body again, playing two games in a week, week in and week out?
It takes a while. There's a lot that goes into it. You know, the support you need from your trainers, from your family, from your teammates, the mental support, when I say support, because there has to be a number of people in your life who are providing you with that confidence. I always had my wife to lean on, but I also had great friends who were always there checking in on me to push me. When you have those down days, when you're a little more sore than you typically would be, and you're questioning, can I keep pushing or should I dial it back? And my mentality was, I'm going 1,000 miles per hour forward. Nothing is stopping me. And you have to have trainers to say, hey, I know you want to keep pushing today. You know, James Hashimoto, who's a legend in the game, brought me back from ground zero when I was Humpty Dumpty in a million pieces. And he was like, we're going to take this slow. As much as you want to be at 1,000 miles per hour, we're going to take it day by day. We're going to take it slow. Don't think of the long-term goal, even though that's what was pushing me every single day was I'm going to get back for this World Cup. As crazy as it is, that was what was driving me. And I had that, kind of in front of me every single day, no matter how bad or good that day was. And so I think for Paxton Pomykal, it's really important to say, this is my overall goal, and this is how I get there by taking it day by day. And whether it's, you know, taking a night, making sure you're taking an ice bath every single day, multiple ice baths, whatever it is, massages, but getting into a good routine and then using that routine every single day and having the right mentality every single day. And then you'll get over it. You'll get to a point where it's not even in your thought process, right, and that you feel free and it's normal. And then I think that's when we'll see the best of Paxton.
And it feels like Dallas is the right place to let that happen. When you're home, mm-hmm, when you're comfortable, to get himself, yes, in that spot, as you
absolutely
said. So it feels like that next season in Dallas makes a ton of sense for him. Let's close out on this one for fun. Drew from Kansas says, I am to Jimmy Madronda what Sam Stastny is to Nuhu. Just give him a lifetime achievement goal of the year. I voted for his Vancouver goal over Zlatan like a madman 2 years ago. Drew, I'm glad you're enjoying the Madronda experience, and we hope it continues over the course of his time in Seattle. Well, for myself, Charlie Davies, producer Anders, and everyone here at Legends Extra Time, thank you for joining us. We will be on site in LA next week, and we will have your pre-All-Star coverage. We're going to talk to a bunch of players and a bunch of commissioners and executives and everything.
I can't wait. Thanks for bringing me out there.
And Charlie, I will see you on the Cape.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm sure.
When you return.
I'm sure I'm getting that invite. I am sure of it. And on that note, thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.